The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Yeah, this is Tyron Tracy Jr., and you're listening to Roster Watch.
Ladies and gentlemen, Roster Watch Nation, welcome back to the epic Roster Watch podcast brought to you by RosterWatch.com, Roster Watch podcast number 600. My name is Alex Dunlap, of course, joined by Cody Carpentier and the Trash Man, as it is our 600th episode. Man, it's crazy, Trash Man. I was talking to Cody before, and he's like, when did y'all even start the podcast? And I said, dude, we were doing radio for like 6 years before we even started doing the pod. It's like, you know, we've been on Sirius since, what, 2011? And I think we started the podcast in 2017. So, but yeah, shout out to us, man. 600 episodes. We wanted to get together and me, Cody, Trash Man, talk about the Dynasty rookie rankings, or, you know, the, I guess just the rookie rankings as far as the running backs and the wide receivers so far. So basically what will be going up on the site will be a like a consensus rank, like the average rank between myself, Trash Man, Cody, and Byron Lambert once he gets his rankings in for his top guys. And that's how they'll be sorted, but you'll be able to see our individual rankings on each player as well. And as I look at the sheet right now, I think let's just start with wide receivers, boys. Like, I think we're all in agreement with one thing that I'm beginning now to. At first, it felt like having Malik Nabers ahead of Marvin Harrison Jr. was something that felt scary as can be, right? Because Marvin Harrison Jr., whenever you just consider it had been just a lock the whole time that he was going to be wide receiver one. I think he probably still is wide receiver one as far as the NFL draft goes when it's all said and done. Cody, but you and I did a lot of work. We've gotten our hands on, you know, on college film for both of these guys. We've talked and talked and talked about it. We've talked about the comps for the various players, the, you know, what does it even really mean to be the wide receiver one in this? You know, is it almost like these two guys are tied at the very top? Is Romo Dunze in that same category at all? And when it comes down to it, for me, with Nabers, once I got over being scared about it and saying, man, I just feel like I don't want to be the guy. I don't want to be the guy who's this clown that has, you know, somebody ahead of Marvin Harrison Jr. I thought to myself, dude, Nabers is a guy I look at and I see a Torrey Holt. You know, I see a dude who all of his best football is still ahead of him. And he has all the requisite traits that I always love to see. And you can depend on him as an absolute volume monster. And just all those things put together for me, along with the fact that he kind of dotted the I at the pro day, makes me feel a little more safe with this. With that being said, now I feel like we have some people in the dynasty. It feels to me like this was a hard decision. One of the hardest ones that I've had since Olave versus Garrett Wilson. And
bingo.
But it's feeling to me like now there are so many people in the dynasty space and the rookie space and some of these guys that have come around lately and stuff, and they're all saying, you know, Nabers is my wide receiver one, he's my wide receiver one and stuff, and it makes me feel almost kind of bad that, you know, making me feel like, wait, am I just kind of one of these trendy people that's just doing this because I'm bored with Marvin Harrison Jr., you know? And it's like I've been having a lot of trouble with it. I'd just like to hear where you are right now. Malik Nabers, Marvin Harrison Jr.
You're not one of the trendy ones, because the thing is we've gone through the whole process, and yes, it sounds different to be like this, and everybody knew coming in the number one at each position was pretty clear. It was Caleb, it was Marv at receiver, it was Brock Bowers at tight end, running back was supposed to be Trey Henderson, and it's not it's not a favorite of some people. So most people are in the space are like, man, you trying to be different, trying to be whatever, right? Doesn't matter. The point I think is we did the whole nine yards. We went through all the events, the combine, the pro days. We watched the film. The numbers came in. Everything's there, and we did our work. And the Band-Aid got ripped off, I don't know, 3-4 weeks ago when people started coming out. And I think Zierlein was the first one that finally officially came out and said, he's my number one. And it kind of made you and I feel better about it because we had been talking about it for the month before that. And you called me a coward because I put a one in these rankings back with both guys. I just
was cowardly.
I'm not picking one. I'm not picking one. I just said one, screw it. And then Odunze can be three. And I think the point is here, as you talked about it, is he reminds you a little Torrey Holt. For me, it's a combination of different things that he can do, that he shows you some chase level downfield speed. He shows you a little bit of digs in the route running. He shows you a little bit of this, a little bit of that. He's just special. And we know Marv is special. And what I've come to realize in these two guys, and you can even lump Odunze in if you want, but mainly just these two guys, is it really doesn't matter. It's your favorite type of candy. You like Snickers or do you like Sweet Tarts? Whatever you prefer. You like Skittles?
Those
doesn't
are
matter.
Totally different types of candy, though. This is like
exactly. This is the point. Marv is this thing. Neighbor's this thing. They play differently. They're different sizes. They're different speeds. The whole nine yards is different. And you get to pick what you want. It doesn't matter. These guys are both super alphas. In any other year, it wouldn't be a conversation. It just so happens they both come out in the same year. And Rome, I think, is right on their heels. He's not far off. So it really, when it comes down to it, 1-2, 2-1, doesn't matter. These guys are both super freaks, and they're both going to be top seven picks.
Trash, I mean, man, what about you? Like,
for me, chalk it up to Neighbors being a year younger. you know, if we're talking about dynasty, we're talking about, you know, age is a factor. So, you know, if we need a tiebreaker between the two of those, let age be the factor. I just think, you know, it's a trash man pick. Neighbors, he's more explosive. I think
this is a trash man pick. It's so bad.
You're getting a more dynamic player. I guess there's more variability in Neighbors' potential outcomes, but you know, those are the kind of picks that I like to be bullish on.
After him, so we is Cody is so I think that Rome Odunze is like just the chalk three. And dude, and honestly, in these dynasty mocks that you've been doing, the super flex mocks, can you still get like a Rome or a Malik Neighbors or a Marv, whichever one falls at six in super flex?
I can pull up a data here in a second, but I think it was the top eight is really where you want to be. Bowers has been around eight, and then that fourth quarterback like McCarthy's been seven. Odunze has been around six. Yeah.
Okay. So it's three quarterbacks and the three wide receivers. So if you're at six, yeah, you get the tail end of the wide receivers. You're probably going to get Rome. But if you're at four or five, is it always the three quarterbacks first, or does
But yes. Yeah,
Caleb,
generally
Marv, Drake May, Caleb, Marv, Daniels. It's all the same. Okay.
Yeah, it's all mixed in.
All right. So we all agree, Rome Odunze. I mean, he's a guy that I hate to say it because it feels like it's the comp that everybody says. And I know we've already kind of had a Ja'Marr Chase comparison here, but the first guy he reminded me of when I was watching him this season, we obviously watched him really closely, was, you know, I thought that he had a lot of Ja'Marr Chase to him. I thought that that's kind of his style of play, and also just a complete dog and an alpha and a competitor and a guy that you want on your football team. And I like that in my prospects and in my dynasty assets. What comes after that is the question of your wide receiver four. And for a lot of people, Cody, and I think in the NFL draft, I think it's going to be Brian Thomas Jr. That ends up going the fourth. And so, and you and I are way off on Brian Thomas Jr. I thought that maybe after the review of those four LSU games that I sent you, I thought that maybe you might come out of this thinking a little bit differently about him, you know?
So the thing with Brian Thomas isn't much about what I think he can do or what I think he can be. It's about, I think we're threading a needle with Brian Thomas. I think he's got some Christian Watson. I think he's got some Martavis Bryant.
Martavis is a pretty good comp, right?
Yeah, but
we need to add that one into the sheet here.
It took that offense in Pittsburgh to show what Martavis was. I have that comp in there. I had Justin Hunter in there as well.
Okay.
And the Brian Thomas thing, it has to be Cincinnati in a T. Higgins role. It has to be Dallas as the opposite of CeeDee Lamb. It has to be a perfect spot for me in fantasy football to bet on this. If he ends up in some offense that's not creative, that is not susceptible to he's not an alpha. He's a beta alpha. That's what he is. He's not. Point blank, period. Beta, he doesn't have a route tree.
Term. I haven't heard.
He doesn't have the route tree. He just doesn't. And
I
think
agree.
He's a. That's where, like I said. So the reason I have him so low is strictly volatility based, where the NFL draft can come around and he can jump from 12 to 6. I think is probably where I would be healthy putting him. I think where I could bump
him Troy to Franklin 6. Ahead of him, man. It's like this
by a spot, by a spot, by a spot.
He should be like, if we're talking about two guys who we realize are developmental wide receivers that other people are going to be higher on than we are, aren't we higher on Brian Thomas than Franklin?
I have them back to back. I don't really like. They're both in a spot that I don't. It's the talent is apparent with both guys. Brian Thomas is very volatile. He doesn't have a route tree. Franklin at least showed a route tree during the season, and he was also a high end dominator at Oregon. I don't love Franklin. Like, I'm not going to make an argument for Franklin.
Well, Thomas had a higher production score as far as the overall production scores. We have Franklin at
17 goddamn touchdowns on one of the best offenses in football.
It doesn't worry you at all that Thompson's 176 pounds and 6'2"?
Franklin. Yeah, that's why I moved him down. I moved him down because he was supposed to be 6'3", 187, run the 4.3s. His hands are – instead, his hands come in small. He comes in 10 pounds light, an inch and a half short. You run slow. And the combine, the gauntlet, the route running was horrid. And
Thomas was better than – he's been better than Franklin at every step. I just don't know why you would have – like, let's at least move him ahead of Franklin.
Is it because you think Franklin has – as much potential in a similar – if he's drafted in a similar spot?
I think the similar spot is I think Thomas is going to go somewhere between 20 and 30, and I would bet Franklin goes somewhere in the top 50, probably 35 to 45. So he's the draft capital is going to be round one versus round two, but it's not going to be very many picks in between. If Franklin is in a spot where he's the number two, say, for example, he goes to the Panthers – and they have Mingo, who we feel middling around, right? Oh, they have Deontay Johnson. Franklin would go in there, and he would not have to be a dependent one. Deontay would get all the targets. Mingo would be able to just play around, do his thing, and Franklin would be able to mature a little bit. I think if in Dynasty, I would like that. I would like to see Franklin attached to a quarterback that I think is going to be successful in due time in Bryce Young over – Brian Thomas in a bad offense. And that's why I have them both right there. They can both move five spots. I have them in a spot where, like, right now as prospects, I don't like either one. 11-12, literally, be transparent, literally have them 11-12. I like a Ricky Pearsall's profile top to bottom. I like Javon Baker's. I like Brendan Rice's. I like Ladd McKay. I like all these profiles way better. I feel much better about a neutral landing spot with all these cats. But I will tell you, Brian Thomas, if the landing spot is correct, Cincinnati, Dallas, Buffalo to a certain extent, if they quit adding people.
All those.
Like, that would – those would be spots where I could
– Kansas City, Dynasty, Los Angeles. There's a bunch of them.
Los Angeles what?
Chargers.
Where are they going to take him at?
Yeah. I mean, it would probably be something. You know what happens in the draft, man? Who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, geez, none of these picks are going to be as you know. It's not going to go straight up like it did on your wacky five round draft the other day.
I had trades in that thing. What are you talking about? But that's the thing is, I need a spot. I need a spot. I need to see what the landing spot is for Brian Thomas. Whereas I don't need to see the
rank
landing
before
spot for Ladd McConkey.
Before we know the spot, so I'm asking you, why Troy Franklin over Brian Thomas? Brian Thomas Jr., look, dude, he has plays where he looks like an absolute monster.
Volatility.
Dude, he could Well, there's no volatility with Troy Franklin, who can't run a gauntlet to save his life.
He can't run a gauntlet to save his life, but he showed on the field at Oregon he could run at least a little bit of a route tree. Brian Thomas did show he could run a little bit of a route tree.
So is he like your Romeo Doubs?
Yeah, who? You're treating him. Look, I have Thomas's wide receiver 5, and I think I'm going to be a little bit low compared. I think the industry consensus, and I don't look at other rankings and stuff at this point to, you know, but I feel like just the talk on Twitter, people talk about him like, and it's the same way that I feel. It's like the upside with Brian Thomas Jr. is the possibly another what? Like AJ Green.
No. You're taking analysis from your community of the dynasty community.
I don't have a community.
This is your community. You're reading the notes of these cockamamie analysts that they call themselves
on
Twitter.
I'm not reading their notes. I'm
saying these people are saying Brian Thomas this, Brian Thomas that. We've done the work. We watched the prospect.
I've done the work. I had to go and get more All-22s.
What is he?
To dig in more.
What is he?
Well, I agree that he's volatile, but dude, Cody, he's not more volatile than Troy Franklin.
Yes, he is.
No, 100%. That's just wrong. It's just 100%. Bad. I'm glad that's why we have a consensus. And I guarantee you, once I get Trash Man some actual film on this, he's going to have Brian Thomas higher than like a 12, and it's going to bring up his consensus grade.
I didn't say he was going to stay at 12. I need to see a landing spot. I need to see draft capital landing spot. And I'll feel much better about it. But I didn't say Romeo Doubs.
I mean, like a player who didn't necessarily test well, didn't look good when we got our actual eyes on him. But you know, we saw the potential for him.
Thomas tested
as a role player in an NFL team, and that's no, kind of.
Thomas ran a 4.33 at like 210 pounds.
Yeah. Thomas is better than Dobbs. I wouldn't call this my.
No,
like a
I'm
Dobbs
talking about
stake.
Franklin and Dobbs. I'm comparing.
Oh, Franklin. So interesting thing, Trash Man, is that Franklin literally, I would tell you 3 weeks ago, I had Franklin as my wide receiver 5. And I was like sitting there debating, putting him in 4. I was going back and forth 4 and 5 with him. But the month before that, I had him at wide receiver 10. And I felt good about having him at wide receiver 10. And then I was talking to Maddie. Kiwum, and he's like, you got to go watch more Troy Franklin. So I went back and watched him, and I was like looking for things that I didn't see the first time I went through, and I started to like build a narrative in my head that he was something like a Jameson Williams, something of like a taller, longer Devonta Smith without the routes, and it was like a Fugazi experiment for me where I didn't believe myself. I got done with it, and I was like, this is right. And then the combine was the next week, and the combine kind of brought him back down. So, you know, do you like Troy Franklin? Is that what you're saying, Trash Man? Because I know you like.
No, I'm just trying to understand your reasoning here.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Well, yeah, the reason he's juxtaposing Troy Franklin and Brian Thomas Jr. is that Cody and I both came out of the combine thinking, dude, both of these guys are to some degree similar in that they are both developmental wide receivers. The people are baking in the fact that they're going to be good to go right off the bat. They just aren't.
Okay. I think it says more about the guys around him. I feel like a Ricky Pearsall, Jalen Polk, you know, Brendan Rice, Ladd McConkey. Like, I think it says more about. And this class is sick, sick deep. And, you know, we saw the guys at the Shrine Bowl. At the receiver position. It's sick, nasty deep. Like, I have Anthony Gould at 31. And you know how much I like Anthony Gould at the Shrine Bowl. Like, there's guys down here that you're like, man, do I really have to have this guy this low? And you can't – you sit here and pull your teeth out trying to think about, can I put this guy about this guy? It's just so deep. And I think that's really what it comes down to is having a Thomas and a Franklin at 11, 12, in any other class, it would be like a 5-6 conversation, which I think would be normal.
Well, I think this is all going to change once the draft happens, too. These guys are going to shift around.
Of course it is. But we have to have the pre-draft rankings up on the site, and that'll probably happen. You know, we usually put them up a week, 10 days before the draft. And so it's, you know, it's about time to start at least having these conversations. We'll have a final conversation like this with, you know, hopefully Byron will come on and we'll all four be on and we'll just discuss our rankings and it'll be finalized. But as of right now, I just feel like we're way off on those two. We're also way off on Javon Baker. We can talk about that in a second, but first I just wanted to say, Trash Man, you have Rome Odunze behind Adonai Mitchell. Adonai Mitchell is a guy for me who at the combine, what the deal was with Adonai. The knock on Adonai, of course, is the fact that he hasn't played much, right? He had the time at Georgia where he was always hurt, comes to Texas. It's the low yards per route run. There were games wherever he had, from what he has said and from what people have said behind the scenes at Texas, there was a time during some of these games where they thought, you know, this is a game where we're going to get JT Sanders going or get Whittington going, or this is a game where we're going to lean on Jay Brooks in the run game or, you know, get X 10 targets, right? And it's hard whenever you're AD Mitchell and you're playing in a team where, you know, Xavier Worthy's got a 29% target share. And there's just going to be some games where you just get your three targets, your four targets, and you got to do the most you can with them. There were some games when he was only targeted like once or twice in the whole entire game. And the word behind the scenes was that they needed to let AD know that he needed to be a more complete receiver. He needed to be a better blocker, really, is what it was. And they basically said to him in some of these games, like, you need to take this game to show us that you're going to bust your hump and you're going to get out there and work and block and stuff. And so I think that sort of explains away a little bit of the production. But when we look at the yards per route run, that's more of an efficiency statistic, and it's an important statistic. And when you look at the monsters in this class and the yards per route run, Malik Nabers, Marvin Harrison, Cody's guy, Javon Baker, Troy Franklin is a really good yards per route run guy, right? That's one sort of feather in his cap as opposed to Brian Thomas, who has good yards per route run. But I think it's a pretty – what's the difference between Thomas and – so Troy Franklin's 3.32, Thomas is 2.61. So both are fine, but clearly anything in the threes is really good as far as prospecting college wide receiver athletes. When Adonai Mitchell, though, the yards per route run for him, I don't have – oh, here it is, 1.72. So brutal, one of the worst in the whole class, right? But – he goes to the combine, runs a 4.34. Whenever we're projecting him to run a 4.52, and we even think at a 4.52, he's a guy, you know, he's just so good manipulating corners at the top of his routes. He gets in and out of his breaks so well. He can track the football so well. There was a time halfway through the season at Texas where he caught a touchdown in every single game that he'd started in his college career. So it's like, you know,
the good potential in the red zone. UT has a long history.
Can I just finish though? So whenever he goes in and he burns a 4.34, you think to yourself, well, gosh, we were saying maybe into the first round, early second, when we think it's a 4.52 and all this stuff. Now there's not even a speed question with him anymore. The thing that got me a little bit worried about him was just kind of a bad pro day, and also the on-field stuff in Indy wasn't great. I don't have that pulled up right now, Cody, but I think he was towards the bottom of that list. Sorry, yeah. Trash Man. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but you know, that's where I am on Adonai Mitchell. That's why after Xavier Worthy at four, and for me, that's where I'm going to have Worthy. You know, I'm not going to get burned on Xavier Worthy. He just moves at a different speed than the rest of the players. But I got Brian Thomas ahead of Adonai Mitchell, and Cody thinks it's bad. You have Adonai at three.
Well, UT has a long history of underutilizing their skill players who, you know, seem pedestrian in college, and then they get in the NFL and they're incredible, or at least really productive.
Priest Holmes, who else?
Priest Holmes, Jamal Charles.
Jamal Charles was awesome in college.
But he was even better in the pros. Who was the tight end?
What, Jermichael Finley.
I just feel like UT has a reputation for, especially with the wide receivers, not really utilizing guys. Well, the thing is, too, if Adonai Mitchell had Penix, you know, I think he would have had similar output too.
No, you don't think Quinn's good? I mean, we're talking about Penix. I think Quinn would go ahead of Penix in the draft right now.
I wouldn't take him ahead of him.
mean, you were, yeah, it was a rough Senior Bowl scene for Penix, man. And Penix has had all the surgeries in the world and stuff. It didn't like Quinn has been a model.
I mean, but just watching them in the games, it's just like,
you still think of Penix as going God mode versus Texas. And I realize that's
it's really hard to forget.
Well, yeah, it's hard to forget. But you got to remember, Texas had the 116th ranked secondary in all of football last year.
Yeah, and as far as compared to Worthy, I mean, Worthy 165 pounds. That's really hard for me to.
It's really hard for you to catch.
It's really hard for anyone to catch.
It's just he's going to go somewhere and just go nuclear, man. So yeah,
I think maybe Mitchell. Maybe I have more of a bias in that I've watched more games with him. You know, and I'll go back and look at those two and see if I need to readjust things, but I like Mitchell's potential.
You guys can see all of our rankings once we get them up over at rosterwatch.com. I'm still finalizing mine. You know, I'm only ranking the top, you know, 20, 25 guys at each position. Cody, who's gone through and done the work on, you know, like he's ranking these guys 40, 45 deep. So once we get through the first 25 or so, it'll just be like Cody's rankings after that, but it'll be cumulative. As far as our consensus rankings, so you can see where we each stand on all these guys. As we head into the draft, any takes, like any one take, either you guys want to fire up about any of these wide receivers before we get on to running backs? Cody, do you want to talk about why you have Javon Baker at 5 and might he be able to move down?
I don't think Baker is going to move down very far. If I do move him down, again, like I've told you this multiple times, I just think the suddenness that he plays with, the route running, crispness he plays with, he has the archetype, he fits the archetype, he ran a good enough 44.54. Everything is there on the resume for Javon Baker. He was a four-star prospect to Bama, transferred to UCF, dominated, was all Big 12 receiver. Like, everything's there. If he would have put these stats up at Alabama, he's in this conversation, if not, you know, the conversation with Xavier Worthy. So I think Javon Baker is properly placed, and if it's fine, if we're going to be a little bit lower on him because of the consensus, that's fine. But I'm just telling you, Javon Baker is going to be a guy in your leagues. You're not going to want to miss out on a guy like this. The question I had for you, Alex, before we do move on to receiver is Troy Franklin, Brian Thomas, Roman Wilson. We had the conversation at the NFL Combine about Roman Wilson running 4.37, 4.38, and you brought up putting him up to wide receiver 7. Why have him? And I have him 12 too. I have him 12. You have him 11. Freshman doesn't have a ranking on him. I don't know if Freshman has a take on Roman Wilson or not. But
based on what we have him ahead of Franklin.
Why isn't he ahead?
I'm changing it right now. So I'm putting Wilson at 10. I'm putting Franklin at 11.
Okay.
That gives us a tie between Troy Franklin, Jalen Polk, and Roman Wilson as far as the cumulative. I mean, that makes them cumulatively wide receiver tied for wide receiver 11. I think that's fine.
All right.
Easy enough. See, you should have just moved Brian Thomas over Troy Franklin, and you could have done it that easy too. Okay. All right. Let's see here. Let's move on to running backs. Again, you guys will be able to see all our rankings and everything in the spreadsheet, where it has a bunch of extra information like their height, weight, arm, hand, wing, 40 time, date of birth, yards per route run, breakout age, all this stuff like that, right? And it's all baked in and considered whenever we're putting these rankings together. We all have Jonathan Brooks over Trey Benson as our 1 and 2s, and the more and more I watch of Trey Benson, man, Cody, he's got some – he can flash – he can flash, dude. He can flash and he can make big plays. And I thought to myself when I was watching him that you go to like you can go to, say, like Mock Draftable or one of these sites where you can look at the metrics, the height, the weight and stuff and see. And one of his top comps on there was Lamar Miller. And I can see a little bit of that, sort of like a little bit of the slasher that he is to start his runs. But he has this breakaway ability, right? One of these higher breakaway rates that reminds me a ton of Kenneth Walker. And I know he's not really similar to Kenneth Walker because Trey Benson is 6 feet tall. I believe Kenneth Walker was more like a 5'8", 5'8 and a half type guy. So he's more slender. But and you might want to fact check me on that, Cody, but I'm pretty sure that's right. I think the Kenneth Walker was in the 5'8" in Indy, yeah. Right?
5'9", 212.
Okay, I think he was. I think he was like a 5.086 or something, but it was probably rounded up. It's fine though. So right, he's got he's got what, 3 inches on him, 4 pounds on him, but plays a lot like him. No 1,000-yard seasons, but you know the fact that he put up the 4.39, he did it in Indy. I have no questions about it. There's no manual adjustments that we have to be made for pro day times. I feel really good about those two at the very top, Jonathan Brooks and Trey Benson.
I'd like to hear what Trashman has to say, because Trashman just did a write-up. I think he just did the video on Trey Benson. I've been waiting since October, outside of Travion Henderson, who didn't declare, of course, went back for next year. I was waiting for Benson to take the running back one spot and like just say, it's mine. Because you guys know I had Braylon Allen up in this conversation for a minute. We followed Jonathan Brooks closely, of course, with Texas football up until that ACL injury. And then it looked like maybe it was going to come down a little bit. But the rest of this class has been kind of a fart sounder. And Benson was the one that I was waiting for during the season to take the spot over. Like the silver platter was there in that Florida State offense that really wasn't an air raid offense. It was a run dominant offense. And the guy next to him was getting a lot of the carries, and Benson wasn't dominating, going for a 180-200 any games. And sometimes he looked slow, sometimes he looked sluggish, I thought. So I have him too, but the guy coming right behind him, Will Shipley, he's coming quick. Will Shipley from Clemson. So I do want to know what Trashman has to say about Benson, though.
I mean, the first thing that jumped off the screen to me watching his tape was his speed. I think he's got good game speed, at least, you know, in the clips that I saw. I mean, it wasn't elite for me to find out that he ran with a 4.39 40.
He breaks away big runs, dude.
Yeah.
Like it looks a lot like KW3. He's not as prolific. He hasn't had a 1,000-yard season.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, but I don't think he's a player that does anything really great. I think he's a player that does a lot of things really well, and he has that speed and that size.
If you do a lot of things really well, you have that speed and that size, you're going to be an asset for an NFL team, and you're going
to
be right. Good.
Well, I compared him to Isaiah Pacheco, who also had a really fast 40. I think mm-hmm. Pacheco ran.
He's not quite as herky-jerky as Pacheco. You know how Pacheco is. He kind of runs like a spaz.
I mean, well, Pacheco had a 4.37 40. And I think they're similar kinds of players in that, you know, they're kind of downhill runners. They can get you those hard yards, but they can break off big plays on occasion. And they're not players who are necessarily, you're going to get involved in the passing game to a large extent. I just think the role on an offense will be similar in the NFL.
No, I mean, he'd be fine with, you know, probably be fine with where he's going in these early, you know, none of these running backs are going anywhere near where some of these top wide receivers are going in these rookie drafts. So if you're in need of running backs, you'll be able to get them relatively cheaply this year. It's, you know, especially if you're have an early second round pick, some of these guys are probably going to fall to you and certainly in 12 team super flex leagues. Cody, you mentioned you've moved Will Shipley. I thought I was getting high on Will Shipley. I thought I was starting to get high on him. And then, you know, super impressed with him at the combine. Now he didn't run, but just get, you know, his interviews and stuff like that. I really like the guy. I like his confidence. You go back and you watch his, you know, you just go watch his tape and you realize, well, you know, this is a guy who in the passing game and as a rusher, it felt like there are some games that you can watch back where he can just, you know, one of these kind of take over a football game kind of guys, right? One of these dudes where you look back and you're like, man, Shipley killed us in that game. Do you know what I mean? Like why couldn't we stop Shipley? And those are the kinds of players that I love to target. I got him up to running back 5. And now, I mean, I guess I can see why you got him up, because I'm beginning to, man, whenever we got that load of, and it's always interesting when you start getting more of these loads of film in, and you can rely more on all 22s than just like the YouTube cutups and stuff. But man, it's two things with Blake Corum, who I currently have at 3. They were giving me pause about him. One was the first thing at the combine. He looked so small. And I told you guys, I said, you got to go stand next to him. And you're like, what? And I go, dude, you just got to see it with your own eyes, man. Trust me. Just go stand next to the guy. He's standing right there. He's doing an interview. Just go stand five feet away from him and look over at him. And I told you guys to do it. I went and did it. You just kind of do it. You're like, man, he really, you know, he comes in a pretty small package. What is he's only 5'7 or something. What, he's 5'7, right? Yeah, 5'7 and a half, 205. So the BMI is good. But then you also realize, you know, he'll be turning 24 this year. I know he's had the 2,000 plus yard seasons, but he does have the ACL he's coming off of two years ago, right? Whenever he did get that ACL 2 years ago, Donovan Edwards comes in and he looks just as prolific as Corum. Now Corum comes back and relegates Edwards back to the bench, right? But it still says something there, right? That's the first thing. The second thing is you just start looking at players that are, it's just like, I was trying to come up with comps. I'm like, could he end up being like he kind of looks like a Jaylen Warren or a Duke Johnson or one of these kinds of players. I mean, is he going to hold up to that volume at the next level? But then on the other side of the coin, I say to myself, dude, his on-field drills in Indy were awesome. He looks like a professional running back. He acts like one. It's a tough deal for me to split, especially because I really want to get higher on Jaylen Wright, and I'd like to get higher on Will Shipley, but I feel like those guys, Jaylen Wright, Blake Corum, Will Shipley, in some order are going to be my 3, 4, and 5s. And I don't know if this point I'm just getting fancy play syndrome by saying I got to get down on Corum and get up on Shipley just because I've been more impressed with the film I've gotten in on him lately. And it, you know, Corum just becomes the guy that I'm a little bit bored evaluating because we've had it longer.
Were you this high on Shipley before the pro day?
Well, the pro day helped, right? You know, the pro day helped. When you go out,
I was asking Cody more so.
Oh, okay.
I had him at 6 before the pro day. And here's how these four guys kind of broke down for me. And I guess I threw Audric Estime. He improved his pro day. I put him at 6 ahead of Blake Corum. But really the conversation is Shipley, Corum, Braylon Allen from Wisconsin, Jaylen Wright from Tennessee. And how this conversation and how I came to Shipley at 3 was, had him at 6, Corum I had at 4. Allen actually began the process at 1. And Allen basically came into the combine 10 pounds light, didn't run, went to the pro day, didn't run, can't catch. Everything, he looks like a mutant compared to everybody, but he just didn't check any boxes. He'd find interview or whatever, but he
checks
didn't
the
run.
First guy off the and bus box.
The that's it. And the worry, though, was we heard people saying 4.44, and I was like, damn, 4.44, 2.35 would be sick, nasty. And then we had people saying 4.61, and we're like, all right, well, if he's going to run a 4.61, he's not going to run. And guess what? He didn't run. If you're going to run a 4.44 at 2.35, you're running. I hate to tell it to you. You're running. He didn't run. Jaylen Wright, I think he has one of the best traits in the whole draft at the running back position. He's got two lightning bolts strapped to his hamstrings. He can do that on any given play. But I think he's kind of a one-trick guy. And for me, it came down to Shipley. I was asked a question on a show last week or the week before, and they said, well, if you have Shipley at 5, why don't you have Shipley a little higher? Like, could you see Shipley being the running back 1 in this class in 2 years? And I just thought to myself, yeah, I can. I can see Shipley being 2 years from now, you ask me in fantasy football, is Will Shipley the running back 1 in this class? You can see it because we've seen the efficiency in college. We've seen Clemson, although they've fallen out the last 2 years, we've seen them lean on Will Shipley. And comparing him to Wright, who I think is an incomplete running back, Allen, who is shown to be an incomplete running back, he had opportunities to rush for 16, 1700, kind of diva off the field a little bit. And Corum, who's 5'7", 205, and the underlying metrics, who are our friend Noah Mopartis, Noah Hills, he was formerly a Breakout Finder, he put together this chart of pre-injury Corum and post-injury Corum. Yards after contact per attempt. Before the injury, 3.84, 3.35. After the injury, 2.4. Pre-injury, missed tackles forced per attempt, 34%, 29%. These are seasons, 2021, 2022. After the injury, 11.6%. Explosive rushes percentage, 15%, 14%. After injury, 9%. Elusive rating, 132, 97. Post-injury, 27. He has not bounced back. He looked fine on the field because he had the Joe Moore Award-winning offensive line at Michigan, the best team we've seen in a couple years in college football. He looked fine. He bounced back moderately. But at 24 years old, at that size, he's not Ray Rice. I don't see it translating to the NFL at that level. I'm going to make the bet on Will Shipley every time. And I wish I would have saw it earlier, but I had him at six. I felt fine about it. Then he ran that 4.4 at the pro day. And I guess you could say I'm all in at him at number three. And to be quite frank, like I mentioned with Trey Benson a minute ago, I think it's close between Benson and Shipley.
We have a question in the chat. Thanks to everybody for being here in the chat, man. Jamie and Baby Genius. And you guys, Baby Genius is asking, was it AJB in a 20-25 second for Amon-Ra? That's fine. I'm fine with either side of that deal. That's a fair deal. I think I would rather be on the Amon-Ra. I think I'd rather be on the Amon-Ra side. You know. So, but it's perfectly fair. If you think it works for you, it's fine. I guarantee if you ran that through a trade analyzer, it would say that's a draw. It's a really, really fair trade. Boys, again, they can go to rosterwatch.com and just keep an eye out for all the content that we're going to have around this rookie class. A ton more coming as we get to the, NFL draft, and certainly after the NFL draft, we'll get the dynasty rookie cheat sheets up and all that stuff once we have landing spots. One final thing, Cody. Audric Estime, it's like, we're talking now, he's a borderline top five guy for you. I watched him. I did my initial work on him. I came away thinking am I crazy to say he just kind of reminds me of like a Chris Carson?
That's not bad. I mean, I don't think it's a bad thing. The way he ran the football this season, though, is something that I think keeps him up into this conversation. I think he ran the 4.6s, 4.67, something like that.
Lunky to you, though, kind of? Like he lunks along a little bit?
Some people brought up like the Jerome Bettis thing in the season, and it's like at times I could see it. He's obviously not the same size as Jerome Bettis, but the efficiency that he had the last couple seasons at Notre Dame, 6.2 yards over his career per carry, 2,300 yards in
like
three seasons.
Like a Ramondre Stevenson.
Yeah, and having him here, it's like it is what it is. Like this class is it's not special, and when you get out of that conversation we just had, like it's Audric Estime versus Tyrann Tracy versus – you know, Isaiah Davis, it's kind of just pick your poison at these 220-pound backs. So I don't mind Audric Estime. Honestly, Tyrann Tracy is one that's just kind of – I'm probably going to end up with more Tyrann Tracy than Audric Estime, even though I have Estime ahead of him.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro. Easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.